You're an entrepreneur. You're a leader. You're a high-performance individual. But many of you are so busy, you're thinking about today only. But what about tomorrow? This is the Alchemist Lounge. We focus in like a laser beam on exploring the art of transformational leadership, company culture, and the alchemical elements of creating and managing healthy and thriving organizations. This is a forum for leaders to hear cutting-edge perspectives, learn how to evolve yourself, and build thriving and sustainable leadership habits and businesses that stand the test of time. Get ready to learn from one of the best, The Alchemist Lounge, with your host, Alex Atwood.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of The Alchemist Lounge. As always, I'm your host, Alex Atwood, and today's guest is an executive coach, a speaker, a best-selling author, Marissa Levin. Marissa is an entrepreneur. She's had such an impressive career that spans over 30 years. She's written a best-selling book called Built to Scale, which is a go-to for leaders looking for growth strategy and human optimal mindset and performance and all sorts of cool stuff like that. And now, as the co-founder of I5 Conscious Leadership, Marissa is redefining leadership education, coaching, and consulting. And we're going to hear all about Marissa's current, past, and all that fun stuff here on the Alchemist Lounge. So welcome to the lounge, Marissa.
So happy to be here. And you know, it was the name of your podcast that completely drew me in, because The Alchemist is one of my favorite books. So you have me at
It's a great book, isn't it? It really, really is. It really tells the story of life and how everything kind of comes full circle. And it's always just right there in front of you, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, let's start here. So I read an article you posted on LinkedIn where it was a conversation I think you were having with a CEO about conscious communication. I think it was like six different ways of having conscious communication. So what I'd like to learn a little bit as we start to get started is, tell me more about this conversation and how can we implement these steps practically in daily communication? Like, aren't we always conscious when we communicate?
So conscious communication is something that I think we all need to elevate our awareness around, especially in today's environment when there is just such a tendency and even an encouragement of just reacting immediately. From a communications perspective, we see something online, we like it, we don't like it, we make a comment, we feel the need to be seen, we feel the need to be heard and to kind of inject our opinions and our voice into something. None of that is really conscious communication, especially as leaders. Now, conscious communication affects all relationships, personal and professional, but what we're talking about here is leadership. And when we think of leadership and conscious communication, you know, being in any position of leadership is one of influence. And words have the tremendous power to either harm or to heal. As someone who is a communicator, you know, by trade and by nature, in terms of being a writer, being a speaker, being a coach, just being someone who processes everything through communication, you know, I'm acutely aware of the power of our words. And one of my most important books that has been in my life for, you know, over 25 years that I've used in my personal life as well as my leadership coaching, it's the one that I recommend to all of my clients. And also I used it even in my parenting, is The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And the first agreement is to be impeccable with your word. And that word impeccable means without sin. That's how it actually translates in Latin. And so often we inject harm with our words because we are just not aware of the power of them. And those are the words that we use with other people, either written or spoken or non-spoken, or just the power of the thought of the word. And also with ourselves, you know? I mean, if we think about the messaging that we tell ourselves quite often, can be very, very harmful. And so the idea of that the first agreement in the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz is to be impeccable with your word, it shows the importance of the power of the word and how much it really matters to be conscious in our communications, asking for permission to proceed, not making assumptions about what people might be thinking or saying or feeling, but really kind of getting clarity on that. And just being really mindful that when we're in a place of communication, our words have just tremendous power.
They do. Very true. And I've always looked at being impeccable with your word as being also something in the realm of being your word in the form of somebody that someone can count on. And being in a conversation, being present in the conversation, and actually being a part of the conversation as opposed to being sort of a bystander or you know, something less than a participant in a particular conversation. So I really appreciate that. And specifically, I appreciate the word impeccable. That's a word that can be looked at a few different ways. When you think of impeccable, it could also be sort of, wow, I better not screw up whatever I say, right? Those words better be perfect as they leave my mouth, which is okay, great. And it kind of makes me feel like, wait, how can every word that leaves my mouth be perfect? Well, I'll put it to you this way, and this is something I'm actually doing some work around right now, which is a program called Positive Intelligence by Shirzad Shamin. It's a really groundbreaking coaching practice that really looks at where the words emanate from, right? Like, are they coming from a place of really being present in the conversation, or are they coming from really trying to determine the best words to use in a particular conversation, which doesn't allow you to be present in the conversation? And when we first started, I have a Grateful Dead tapestry behind me. And one of the things about the Grateful Dead that I think is brilliant and really makes them something very special in terms of being very conscious is that the music they made wasn't made necessarily note by note to be perfect. But what it was done was the music was made to be in the conversation with the audience and with the band. And it's a long, ongoing conversation. And what I've learned in my conversations and in the way that I relate to people, if I really want to listen, I'll get something by being present in the conversation that I won't get if I'm choosing each word so carefully. And in my world, as a CEO and also as a coach, it's so important to be in that conversation, to be present in that conversation from a place of ultimate positivity or ultimate authenticity, if that's what's, you know, in the conversation. So thank you for that. And the Four Agreements is absolutely huge there. I want to understand what else around the Four Agreements have you used in your parenting and in your coaching world?
All of it. I mean, it's been such an integral part of who I am for more than two decades that I don't really know how to function without it. So, you know, be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions and always do your best, knowing that your best changes from moment to moment and hour to hour. You know, don't take anything personally. That for me, you know, because of what my spiritual work has been, I mean, I just have had a very intense spiritual path over the last three decades as well. And just the way I kind of look at the world and kind of see the soul behind the role and just how I see people and knowing that everybody is really doing their best all the time, I've learned not to take anything personally. I mean, even when people show up in ways that doesn't feel good, the way they're showing up is a reflection of how they're engaging with the world. It's not a reflection of us at all. We're born from a place of love. And then based on all of our experiences and everybody, every human being has them, we have to learn self-preservation. We have to learn self-protection, right? We have to start to armor our heart and close that heart a little bit. And as a result, certain human characteristics come to the surface, whether that is resistance or mistrust or skepticism. And then those feelings manifest in certain actions, right? Whether it's gaslighting or manipulation or untruthfulness and lying. Those actions are a result of core wounds that we have that have resulted from somewhere in childhood that are either still at the unconscious level or haven't been healed. And so for me, because just of the deep spiritual work that I've done and what my spiritual beliefs are in terms of the soul and the spirit, and then the inner work that I've done, when someone behaves in such a way, or they, you know, demonstrate a behavior in such a way that may not feel good, if I'm coming from an ego perspective, I don't know, Alex, I just have gotten to the point where I'm able to actually move past and transcend even forgiveness, because the idea of forgiveness still indicates that we've been wounded, that someone has done something to us. The idea of needing to forgive someone indicates that there's been a transgression against us, right? And somehow through all my work, I've gotten to be able to transcend forgiveness and move straight to compassion and understanding. Straight to compassion and understanding, where someone says something that doesn't feel good, they do something that doesn't feel good, and I'm able just to look at them and see the pain that actually has created that action and come from a place of compassion and understanding and only wish them healing. Like, I'm not even ever in a place of forgiveness at this point, because from a humanity perspective, I can just know that, like, everyone just does their best. And at the end of the day, like, anyone that you're engaging with, you're dealing with their inner child that has a core wound that is interacting with the inner child that where you have a core wound. And so that's why healing that core wound is so important, because ultimately that's what, like, disarmors our heart and removes the barrier around our heart and truly lets us get back to who we are, which is just all love.
That takes a lot of time to be able to hone what you're describing there, to go directly to compassion, because, you know, we go through our day with all sorts of different triggers waiting to take hold of us, specifically those in the in what your journey was, which was the entrepreneurial journey, where you're you know, stricken with all sorts of opportunity, but also all sorts of potential pitfalls, because you're on your own when you do that. So let's talk about that. You've mentioned a couple of times your spiritual journey over the past three decades, and I know you've had your entrepreneurial journey over the past three decades. So walk me through, where did the entrepreneurial journey start, and kind of walk me through where you started to see the spiritual component starting to show up in your daily life as an entrepreneur, a warrior out there getting it done.
So it didn't show up, like, it wasn't like my entrepreneurial, you know, manifested this spiritual journey. We started off because I recognized that you have a Grateful Dead tapestry in the back, right? So, like, I was born this way. I don't know how else to put it. Like, I just have, I've always been highly intuitive. I've always been highly, highly empathic. It's something that kind of runs in our family on my mother's side. I think that's why I was drawn to the whole entire Grateful Dead culture, because it just was, it's all love, right? And so at my core, that's how I'm wired. It's just how I'm wired. And so my entire entrepreneurial journey has been one of service. There's no question. Like, even with my first company, servant leadership was just how I led. You know, we had over 70 people at one point, probably more than that. And I've always viewed my role as the CEO in that company. If you take an org chart and you flip it on its head, I mean, most org charts are like, you know, a regular triangle. If you invert it into a, you know, an inverted triangle, and you've got the CEO, the leader, at the bottom, right, by her or himself, holding up the organization with the intention to make sure that they're supporting the organization and that everybody in the company has what they need to be successful. That's just how I always looked at my role as a CEO, like, to be one who was in service to my people. And that's, you know, even when I won, like, the Smart CEO 100 awards and the GovStar award and this Brava and all these awards that I won for leadership, that was always when they interviewed me going back, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I talked about servant leadership, which is something that was coined by Robert Greenleaf. But that's just kind of how I've always gone through life. And one of my most important advisors and mentors and gurus is Ram Dass. And one of his most important philosophies that he talks about is that, you know, always keeping that open heart, and that when we can create that safe space for others to come up for air, like ultimately as humans, that's what we want to do. Can we be a safe space for someone to come up for air? And that's just always been my nature. I'm a certified Enneagram practitioner. I'm a full 2 on the Enneagram, which is the giver and the pleaser and the rescuer. And I've done all that work around, like, what does the healthy 2 look like? What does the unhealthy 2 look like? The self-sacrifice. But, you know, for me, to be able to create that safe space where people can come up for air, and that's why I love coaching so much. But even as a business owner and having 75 employees, being able to be that safe space has just always been what my driver is. And so I've now done that through multiple iterations. I mean, you know, I sold my last company last summer, Successful Culture International, and that was also around how do we create cultures where employees feel safe and heard and relevant and seen and connected to a larger purpose. And we did that through the consulting and the training and all of that. And now I'm building I5 Conscious Leadership with another partner. And the reason that I wanted to start this company is because it truly is the intersection and the integration of my spiritual path and my 30 years of entrepreneurship, to really help leaders understand that when they become more present and more conscious with their people, and those people feel seen and heard and relevant and safe, that ultimately that's what leads to higher employee engagement, higher employee loyalty, less attrition, higher retention, and ultimately higher profits, right? So this isn't woo-woo. I mean, this is like when your people feel fully safe, emotionally safe, they're going to give 110% to your organization, and that's going to benefit everybody. I just did a coaching call yesterday with a longtime CEO who runs a medical practice in New York. He's got multiple locations. And he had a situation where one of the employees received information that may have made her feel unsafe. And he was going to address it in one way. And I completely, like, said, no, we're not doing it that way. We need to do it this way, because the single most important thing is that you restore her emotional safety above all else. We'll get to the bottom of it in terms of how she came across certain information. That's a separate issue. The most important thing for every CEO is to make sure that their people feel emotionally safe. I've always said that the CEO stands for Chief Emotional Officer. And even when I would, like, have people that would come and work for me, you know, I would see them as employees, but I'd see them as people who are coming in with, like, invisible suitcases of baggage. You know, employees come to us, they're bringing 20, 30, 40, 50 years of life, right? And we might be hiring them for a job or for a position or for a certain level of expertise or technical knowledge. But at the end of the day, you're hiring human being, and those people have been through the ringer in one way or another, either at another position in life, illness, whatever it would be. And as leaders, we need to see our people as people first. They feel seen and they feel safe and they feel heard, right? And so it's the CEO is the chief emotional officer, first and foremost. And when people will feel seen, they will give you everything they are.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't always been this way. Probably when you were starting your entrepreneurial journey, the lens that now we get to look through, which shows us servant leadership and shows us how important people are, is there now. But I know, you know, maybe 15 years ago, it was almost foreign speak in a regular sort of boardroom to have these sort of conversations. So I'm wondering, what was your first company? What was the first business that you built? And how did you inject this servant leadership into that particular business?
So that company was called Information Experts. It was an education, training, human capital, and marketing firm. I grew to about $14 million. We served the civilian defense and intel agencies, about 15 different federal agencies, as well as the commercial market and nonprofits. And I brought to that organization me. Like, I don't know how to exist in any other way. And the first thing that I did, and, you know, my undergraduate degree was English with a concentration in Shakespeare. It's not like I took business courses at University of Maryland undergrad. And then I went and I got a master's degree in organizational development and human resources. But I started that company, and the first thing that I did was I created a core value system. I mean, that's living from your values and knowing what your values are, what your moral compass is, what your true north is, what you will and will not accept from a behavioral standpoint. For me, that was the first thing, was establishing the values, the mission, the vision. And this is me, I'm 55 now. This is me at 25 years old. I don't know where I learned it. It was just something that was innate. And because of a situation that I had at a previous company where I did not feel safe, I did not feel emotionally safe, which is why I left and I felt undervalued, I wanted to make sure that I was creating an organization, a culture, which back then, I mean, that word was hardly even used, but I wanted to create an environment where people felt valued. And so my very first value at like age 25 was quality of life inside the company, quality of life outside the company, and quality of products and services. And it was the very first thing that I created in my company. And my very first hire of my very first company was a director of quality. I mean, this is 40 years ago. This is before LinkedIn. This is before Facebook. This is, you know, before there were women's groups where I could go. I mean, there were very few women CEOs back then. I was 25. I mean, so many places I wasn't even taken seriously. But I just, from the moment I started, I just always led from the heart because it's just how I've lived. So that's the culture I ended up creating. And we ended up being on the cover of USA Today newspaper, like literally on the cover of USA Today. For being a trailblazer in a value which I called responsible flexibility, because I wanted my employees to be able to spend time with their families. And this is going back almost 30 years ago, long before telecommuting. And I was like, you know, even back then, I'm like, they need to be present with their kids. They don't need to be in the office all the time. They know that they have work to get done, but they need to be present with their families. That was 30 years ago that I was on the cover. Our whole entire company, the picture was on the cover of USA Today newspaper. It was crazy.
Wow. Congratulations on that.
I don't even think I realized at the time. And here I am like holding my four-year-old and I'm on the cover of USA Today newspaper with my company at age 30. For being a trailblazer in the idea of responsible flexibility. But it's just like how I've always lived my life, you know, like building a company that really valued work-life integration was really, really important to me long before it was cool, I guess.
I love that you just said work-life integration. Mm-hmm. That is such a key word, the integration. I've heard, you know, the buzzword of work-life balance. Ugh. Has always been a, yes, same here. Thank you. It's been a misnomer to me. As if you go to work and you put your life on some shelf. Here, let me take my life and I'm going to go ahead and just kind of put it away for a minute. It no longer exists. Now I'm at work. Oh, here I am in life. Work doesn't exist anymore. Well, guess what? Whether you're at work, the gym, with your kids, in the car, at a dead show, wherever you are, you're in life. And so
it really
is about the integration, isn't it?
Even the idea of work and life being separate, like there's one life, like you're one person. And back then, even, you know, almost 30 years ago, when I would get interviewed about leadership and I would talk about values, I always talked about like, there's got to be congruence between how the leader lives their life, like the values that drive their life and the values that drive their company, right? So I can't create a company where I say, oh, I value work-life integration or I value flexibility, but I'm working around the clock and I'm not present with my own kids. I mean, I built a company that valued that because that's what I needed in my own life. Like, I needed to be present with my kids. I didn't have a full-time nanny because I wanted to be present with them. And that meant that I left a lot of money on the table also in terms of growing my company. But, you know, you ask my kids now and they're almost 23 and 26, you know, what was your mom's priority growing up? And they'd be like, oh, we were. I mean, there just was no question, even though I was building the company. Like, it just was no question.
Yeah. And well, you started your first company when you were 25, so you didn't have any of those old notions or any of that sort of old mentality to go through. At 25, you can create whatever it is that you want. You don't have to follow the old rule, right? And we see that happening over and over again. It's so beautiful that you came into your entrepreneurial world with people first, because guess what? Every company is a group of people, whether they're remote, whether they're together, they're a group of people.
They
and
are.
People generally have the same wants and needs and just really love to be part of a group, part of a family, part of a community where there's listening there, there's growth there, there's adaptive behavior there, there's everything there. And there's also challenge. But guess what? You learn from challenge. You learn from every single day, and you integrate that into your life.
You do. And you know, the whole thing with the pandemic and, you know, COVID kind of shutting down offices. Like I said, my sons are almost 23 and 26. My oldest son graduated from Virginia Tech in our living room. He did not have a graduation ceremony. And, you know, when he took his job prior to graduation before the pandemic, he was supposed to be on site. You know, he was going to be working at Deloitte in Arlington, Virginia on site. And then the pandemic shut all that down. This generation that has not been able to really understand the amazing benefit about being in an office with a community. You know, the second company that I had was called Successful Culture. And the reason that I called that Successful Culture is because my first company, I had such a beautiful culture. You know, like the fact that people were so connected in the organization, like personally. And I look at the young generations now who have embraced all of this remote work. And I mean, I'm working from my home and I get it, but they have lost something of not being able to be on site with each other. And I'm happy to see that we're going back to hybrid, because there is such a value in the human connection that happens when you're in the office, the amount of collaboration that happens, the amount of energy that is exchanged, just that human connection that cannot be replaced on Zoom. It just can't be replaced. And so I'm really encouraged, at least, that we are seeing a hybrid model that's kind of taking place rather than staying fully remote.
I agree with you 100%. Also, when you think about, at least when I think about school, which is really where our first communities form, where our first friend groups form, we build these really strong bonds in grammar school and then going on to, you know, middle school and high school. And it's really being there with those people in those rooms, going through those experiences, dealing with those challenges, those awkward situations, those teachers who are a little bit too strict or a little bit too lenient, and in the playground and all of the things that happen. Yeah. That is the journey of childhood. And so that also connects into the work life, the being at work and building, forming these bonds with these people that are going through the same journey you are, with a little tweaks here and there, really allows you to be able to see a mirror. And although, you know, a lot of a virtue of agreement that sometimes we build in work is, you know, it's so hard or it's so great to be at home and wow, can't wait to leave, it's 5 p.m. The truth is, those days when I was at school, in grammar school, and I was sick for a few days, I really wanted to get back to school because I missed my friends,
Sure.
you know?
That community.
And Yeah, and that community, and you know, people that right now in my company, and some of the people that I talk to, when you know we're currently doing a lot of hiring, they have the same need.
The tribe.
You know, they really.
You need a tribe.
Yes, that tribe, that family, that community. Yes, that's that makes the work that much more meaningful. Going in and meeting people and being able to work side by side by people. It's just such an important piece that we don't necessarily quantify, but when it's missing, it's a missing. And it's absolutely, in my opinion, a necessity.
Well, when I get asked to speak about culture, which is often, I use the word tribe, because when organizations create cultures, they create rituals, they create traditions, they create language, right? Like there's just like that is what a culture is. It becomes a tribal type of community. And, you know, when I was running Information Experts, we had actually in our budget as a line item, I had what was known as a GTC, a Good Times Committee. And we allocated money to our Good Times Committee. And we had full-time people that also part of their job was to run the Good Times Committee. And they had budget, right? And like they would create neighborhood scavenger hunts. Like I remember dividing up into teams, and one of the things was we had to go to the gas station and we had to get like the lowest priced amount of a receipt possible. And like print out that receipt. And that was one of the things. And I just remember being at the Exxon station with our team. And I was like, don't pump it too hard. We only have to get 0.01 cents. Like I can remember like being so competitive with the scavenger hunt and then going to all these places around Herndon and Reston, Virginia, and then meeting up at Jimmy's Old Town Tavern at the end after we did the scavenger hunt. You know, I can remember the Thanksgiving lunches that we would have. We had things for every holiday. And for Thanksgiving, we would provide all of the main courses from Boston Market, and then all of our employees would provide all the side dishes. And we always had like a really fun movie playing in the conference room, like Airplane or, you know, one of the Christmas movies, you know, that were really fun. Yeah, Christmas Vacation. Like, you know, we always had like a really funny movie, you know, or Princess Bride playing in the conference room for people just to come in throughout the day and get the food and watch the movie. And, you know, it was like those types of things. And one of my all-time favorite memories of our company is, so Mike, you know, as I said, I have older kids. And when I was, you know, started the company and they were younger, my family had passed down this Little Tykes garden set. Like I literally, like my niece who is now 33 passed it down to my nephews, and then they passed it down to my kids, and we had like this garden set, this plastic garden set by Little Tykes. And then my kids outgrew it, and then I passed it down to my employees in baby showers. We would have baby showers in our companies. And then that Little Tykes garden got passed down to my employees over a period of like 15 years as they continued to have kids. Like you can't quantify that in like, should we be hybrid? Should we be remote? Should we be on site? Like that type of bonding, the fact that I had baby showers for my employees and I would read Goodnight Moon at the baby showers for my employees. How do you quantify that? That's what culture is, right? Like that's it.
Yeah.
And people who are constantly working remote, it's great that they can work on beaches and they can be in Bali and they can be in Costa Rica, and that's all wonderful, but they have no idea what they're missing from a cultural perspective when they are not fully embedded in an organizational culture. They have no idea.
Yes, what they're missing for themselves. Really, like really learning and experiencing their colleagues.
Yeah.
Experiencing the business. I'm with you.
And just bonding, you know, as a CEO, it was truly like, I loved what we did for all of our customers. And, you know, we did amazing work and made such a difference in the lives of thousands and thousands of people through the quality of our work. But walking into my office and seeing everybody there and just knowing how much they love being there, that for me as a CEO was the most important, most rewarding thing.
How lucky your employees were to have somebody step into a leadership role with that sort of consciousness and that sort of intention is, I mean, absolutely rare then, even I would say somewhat rare now.
Yeah.
And it says a lot about you. You know, I was
I'm a child.
One of the things I was
same. Like a child in like a 55-year-old body. Yeah.
We all are. You know, there was I don't know where it was. Someone told me, I might have heard it on the Dead Tour or something, but that you know, the key is going through life and accumulating the wisdom and then going back to the spirit of youth and taking that wisdom into that child through those childhood eyes and experiencing it all new. Something about, I didn't say that perfectly, but whatever that sounds like the secret to it all. And being a child is funny because you've made I read somewhere that you're committed to empowering a billion people to live their most intentional and joyful lives.
Yeah.
And that is an audacious, very youthful, spirited goal. So I love it. And what's your game plan? Like, you know, how do you plan to reach that massive number of people?
So it's not about the end game, right? It's about the intention. It's about the spirit of intention that through my work, if I wake up every day and I say, I want to alleviate suffering, I want to increase joy, and I'm intentional about that every day through my work, through this podcast, right? Like, I'm hoping that this podcast brings joy to your listeners, right? So they'll be part of that billion people. I'll never know if I achieved it, and that's okay for me. It's about the intention and the journey, and knowing that, like, I guess through my own spirit, that I have the capacity to be able to bring that joy to people. I'll never know if I reached it. And that's okay with me. It's not about the end state for me. It's about the intention of bringing joy and alleviating suffering.
Yeah. And this Dharma that you sort of called out in terms of elevating the consciousness of the world. Mm-hmm. That was something that, and I know in the beginning of our conversation, you said that you were born with it. And as you say, intention is there. When did you identify that this was the intention, this was the mission in your life, that this was the Dharma? There must have been a point.
Gosh. I wish I could tell you. I don't. Because I've just always been such an empath and I feel the pain of so many people, which is a hard way to go through life. You know, one of my biggest challenges has been to not armor my heart, but like when you feel so much what other people feel, it can be draining, it can be hard. I'm not really sure when it kicked in that it was like this intention, you know, but I kind of put it to words when I was launching Marissa International like a year and a half ago. It's kind of like when I guess I put language around it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. You started to articulate it a bit.
Yeah. But I mean, for better or for worse, I've been a rescuer my whole life. I'm a recovering rescuer, which is, you know, because it hasn't always served me, hasn't always led to some of the best decisions, because rescuers attract wounded people, right? And so I've grown and evolved and learned and, you know, known that like I can't fix everybody, I can't heal everybody, and like, you know, that's been a hard lesson for me to learn. But as a recovering rescuer, I just have always been someone who wants to alleviate suffering, and I guess I just kind of put it to language a few years ago with a corporate mission or a dharma, you know, or a lifetime legacy mission.
That's so beautiful. And you know, people listening now, they're hearing, you know, this person that was born with this incredible ability to innately empathize with others and to be sort of compassionate, and then this entrepreneurial DNA.
Yeah.
People may listen to this and think, you know what? She's different than I am, right? There's something going on. There's something perfect in her life where she sort of has all of these interesting, you know, compassionate, you know, this way of empathizing. And what people might not understand is that you don't have it all together.
There's and one of the things that I all of that compassion, first of all, there's a big shadow side, right? Like the self-sacrifice.
Yes.
Right. There's, yes. You know, my intuition serves me 98% of the time. And sometimes I don't listen to it and I wait, you know, I wade into places I shouldn't wade. And there's been a lot of pain in my life too, for sure. You know, because I tolerated a lot of behavior that I shouldn't have tolerated. So we all have a shadow side, for sure. We all have a shadow side. And it's taken me a long time to learn how to really step into my ultimate self-love and self-worth, which I've compromised in the past. Again, that rescuer, right? Feeling the need to love everybody and, you know, just... There's a quote that I've used with my clients a lot that, you know, you are not required to set yourself on fire to keep other people warm. We all teach what we must master. And that was something that I had to learn for myself, right? That self-sacrifice is not a noble virtue. So none of us have it perfect. I've had a really difficult, arduous journey through my years of entrepreneurship. But at the same time, even like in my darkest times, there is just a part of me that has joy and loves life and is very grateful to be alive. And I don't, you know, I'm grateful that I have that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on our pre-interview sheet, one of the things you said was, I don't have my shit together all the time. And I said, who does?
Wait, did I actually write that?
Yeah, you wrote that down. You wrote that down. Yeah. And I said, I love this. Because you know what? Look, we know as people that have led companies that there's nothing more powerful than vulnerability. And talking about my self-doubts, my imposter syndrome, as I started into my entrepreneurial journey, and where that crept up on me.
I'm going to have to move to Canada. I'm like, today's the day I get figured out.
Yes, exactly. So you still deal with it, that to a certain degree, right? So tell the listeners, those who are listening to this incredibly successful coach and entrepreneur and, you know, empath and conscious, you know, an author, you know, how do you deal with that? What do you, you know, what happens when that shows up for you?
I remind myself not to take myself so seriously. And I do a lot of meditation. I mean, honestly, like, again, it gets back to my spiritual path, like a lot of Ram Dass, you know, lectures and education. And one of my favorite meditations from him is called Sit Around the Fire. And he just talks about how, like, we are not the human beings that we think we are. Like, we're just not, you know, we are truly spiritual beings, you know, that, you know, we can be involved in the world, but we're not of the world. We can be involved, but we're not of the world. We are spiritual beings. And when you remember that and you can kind of look at your entire life as a curriculum, right? That every single thing that happens in your life and every person that comes into your life is literally a vehicle for education and transformation and evolution and growth. If you can view every single thing in your life, I mean, you know, I constantly find myself in situations and I'm like, what is this teaching me? And this is happening because this is evolving my soul. And where are the patterns that I need to be aware of? And where are all the unconscious behaviors? And how is my shadow showing up? And I'm so often, Alex, in almost all the time in the place of the witness as well as the participant. And again, that gets back to Don Miguel Ruiz. I learned that 25 years ago in his book, where he talked about the importance of being both the witness, like looking down from the balcony on the dance floor, and also being the person in the dance. And that was 25 years ago that I learned that concept. And then Ram Dass talks about that all the time, that, you know, we have to be in this place of awareness. And you know, one of his other meditations teaches us that if we can just witness all of our emotions and all of our experiences and all of our situations, literally as clouds passing by in an open sky, and just be aware, like, oh, there is sadness. Oh, there is despair. Oh, there is this challenge, you know? Oh, there goes fear. And recognize that we are not our emotions, and they are energy in motion, and they ebb and flow all the time. And if we can be in a place of awareness and witnessing what we are going through, instead of being identified by what we're going through, that's really how I move through it all. It's really from that perspective.
Yeah, so not being attached to any particular emotion, but really sort of separating yourself and witnessing, as you said.
Yeah, and using it as a vehicle for growth, right? Like, or as Ram Dass says, for that vehicle of for liberation, right? Like, that's really what all of our experiences are. They are vehicles for growth and evolution and awareness and expansion and liberation. And it does take incredible work to get there. Like, it really does, because from an ego perspective, we identify so much with what is happening to us and what is happening around us. And that's where the suffering comes in. I just had a conversation yesterday with someone that, you know, whether we realize it or not, at the unconscious level, we are choosing our suffering. We're choosing it because we are attached to some outcome, you know, and things are not the way that we want them to be. And so we struggle. That's where our struggle comes in, is when we cannot accept what is, and we can't look at it from a place of awareness and information and learning and growth. And that's where our suffering comes in.
Yeah, I get it. I understand now how conscious leadership is just such a massive theme.
It's massive.
In everything that you do.
Yeah. And we want to, you know what? We want to make this accessible to every organization. Like, there are other companies out there that work in that space, but they really are targeting the larger companies that have the massive budgets. Yeah. Well, guess what? Every leader, whether you're just coming into leadership or you've been in leadership for 30 years, has the opportunity to awaken as a leader. And we are structuring our programs, our whole entire leadership curriculum and our mastermind groups that we have conscious leader mastermind groups that are forming. We're structuring them for everybody to be able to afford it, to invest in it, because we believe in it so much. We have a sliding scale based on the size of your company to be able to do the work to become a conscious leader. And when leaders elevate their consciousness, their people will feel seen and heard and relevant and safe. And guess what? Their profits will go up, because those people will be giving everything they have to their companies. This isn't just woo-woo. This is the strategic side of me as well, knowing that a conscious leader drives elevated profits, period.
Yes. And I love that now we're talking a little bit about I-5 conscious leadership. You know, the old playbook that you could have called it would be, in especially the small businesses, would be the idea of a company retreat, you know, call it a ropes course, where the company gets together as a group and they help each other in a particular circumstance that allows them to, whatever the issue that, you know, particular colleagues had, you know, in the office, they can go and help themselves on this rope course, recognize each other as human beings, move through it. And what happens after that retreat? Well,
everyone goes back.
It tends to go back to where it was, right?
It does.
So tell me about, So tell me, and I think you know where I'm going here. Tell me about where I-5 conscious leadership kind of fills that void and brings that consciousness throughout, so it becomes more of a holistic type of endeavor.
So we have an end-to-end model where, you know, we will go in and first we educate on conscious leadership. Then we do assessments of the leaders so that we, you know, my partner and I are trained in the EQI, the emotional intelligence assessments, both for individual and 360. And then I'm also a certified Enneagram practitioner, as I mentioned. So our leaders will take the Enneagram, and then they will also take the EQ assessment, and we will do a 360. Because I will tell you that in all the culture work I've done over the last 25 years, 100% of the time, there has been a disconnect between how the leader sees himself and how the employees see the leader. And that is where the problems come in organizations, because those gaps will continue to widen unless they are brought to light and the leaders are willing to do the work to close that gap. So we make sure that we get a feel for what that gap is between how the leaders see themselves and how the employees see them. And that's our baseline. That's where we start our work from. And then we do work around engagement and we survey around engagement. And from there, we develop a conscious leadership playbook, a roadmap for our employees. And we go through identity, intention, integrity, insight, and inspiration. And those are the five elements of being an I5 conscious leader. What is your intention as a leader? Not for your organization, but as you showing up as a leader. What's your intention? What is your identity? What are your personal core values as a leader? Not the organizational values, but the leadership of values. Integrity, how are you showing up in both your intention and your identity? Insight, how do you truly see your people? And we train how to do that. And then the inspiration, how do you inspire a movement within your organization? So we take people through that model, the I5 model. And then once we do that, we have a coaching model to ensure that there is full integration. And that's what you're asking about. It isn't like we do this training and then we leave. We have a full integration coaching model after we've done it. And then we come back again a few months later to make sure that it is all working. And then we have the supporting mastermind groups if they're interested. So look, you know, I've done a lot of spiritual work, higher consciousness work, where we know that the set and the setting and the preparation are very important. And then the integration following the consciousness work, because if you don't do the integration, you're right. You just go back to being what you were and how you were. And so the integration is a key part of our model to ensure that it sticks.
That is, first of all, it's extremely practical. Number one. And number two, it takes into account that that people will be able to go down a certain path, build this, and then integrate it through different types of, call them spheres of mastermind and so on and so forth. It's brilliant that you're doing this. It's brilliant that you're doing this in the DC area in Bethesda, specifically centered there, because I've said time and time again, that area absolutely can take a let's call it an injection of consciousness, empathy, spirituality, particularly in the business community of the Washington D.C.
Well, and the
area.
Government community. We have two agencies, government agencies, that are just getting ready to sign for year-long conscious leadership programs. Two agencies are about to sign for year-long conscious leadership programs. Can you imagine the ripple effect that's going to have in these government agencies? They were so excited about the idea of conscious leadership. There's no one else doing it. We're literally the only company that has a model around conscious leadership.
Congratulations on that. And being from the area, actually, this is I'm part of the Center for Advancement of Wellbeing for George Mason. I just finished up a cohort there, and we had some folks from all sorts of government agencies there looking to start to boost well-being in their organizations and start to look at consciousness and leadership. So it's happening. You're on the forefront of it.
Let's talk about a referral fee, Alex.
We have a lot more to talk about. We're coming almost up to the end of this particular episode. And this was such a joyful, insightful, there's three or four more eyes I can put into this, but I absolutely enjoy this. Marissa, those interested in learning more about you and or I5, where's the best place for them to start looking?
So come to our website, and you can also get a wonderful white paper on the connection between self-awareness and leadership that is all based on Harvard research. And our website is I5, consciousleadership.com. Definitely come and join our conscious leadership community there. And then I'm all over LinkedIn. I think that's probably how we connected. So Marissa Levin, you can look at me there. I5 Conscious Leadership has a LinkedIn page. I mean, I'm on Facebook too, but you know, LinkedIn is kind of like what our my biggest community. I'm on Instagram too. I mean, I don't know who the 20,000 people are following on Instagram. I have no idea, but I really, it really is about LinkedIn. That's kind of where we are. But come to I5 Conscious Leadership, sign up. We also have a twice weekly Today's Conscious Moment email that goes out. It takes less than 2 minutes to read, and it's about giving you the space to pause, exhale, and reflect. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful conscious moment that my partner writes. And it's just, you know, it's a breath of fresh air in the middle of a really busy day. Mm.
And that sort of recharge is exactly what so many people need in the middle of those days. And, you know, it's it's a recharge like that, whether it's just a somatic practice or just a breath or something like that, that can just bring those brilliant ideas that are just under the surface, can bring them right
out
there.
You're so right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I do so much meditation and breath work. And in fact, my partner and I were talking about this. I'm likely going to want to bring in meditation and breath work into the I5 model through the coaching, because I bring in meditation and breath work right now through, you know, through my coaching all the time. I mean, I have an executive who works for a government agency. I just wrapped up a coaching engagement, coaching 6 or 7 different executives at one of our government agencies. And she would go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting. And I finally got her to like restructure and put like at least 10 to 15 minutes in between meetings. And she would go into a bathroom stall and do breath work that I taught her. Like, you know, we always started our sessions because when I first started coaching her, she would talk Alex for 15 minutes straight without a breath. Mm. 15 minutes straight without a breath. And then I was like, we need to breathe. And so I started all of our sessions from that point forward with breath work, and it changed her life. It literally changed. She really elevated spiritually. So many CEOs come to me and they, you know, I've been coaching some people 9, 10 years, and they come to me because they want to be better leaders and they have culture problems and they have strategy issues or whatever. It ends up being such a spiritual journey, the way that I integrate all of it. And I have some LinkedIn videos about how I integrate spirituality just naturally into my coaching, because it just, for me, it feels so natural, you know?
Yeah. It's natural to us all just to be in our breath. It's one thing we all, well, one of many things we all share, but the one thing that keeps us connected into this life of ours. Wow. What a profound conversation. I really appreciate the time that you took here today in the lounge. Yeah. So much fun. So great. Now that, now I'm in Florida now, but, I'm back in the DC area at least once a month. My headquarters are based there in Falls Church, so I will plan to like meet up with you at some point, and we can.
We're totally gonna meet up. I wish we would have met like 6 months ago, because we totally could have planned to go to a show together. Like, that would have been a blast.
It's all right. Hey, look, we got there's shows coming. This one's over, which then is a new. There's a new beginning. When one chapter ends, another one opens. So
no, I know. And look, even on the colors, I'm on brand with your tapestry. Like, I didn't even like, we didn't even, you know, coordinate that.
You know? It was coordinated in the divine way.
Absolutely.
Wow. This was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Marissa. This was such valuable information. And we will.
So thank you. Thank you so much for providing the platform like that. You know, you are the platform for getting the voice out. And we, you know, you're the one to thank.
You've been listening to The Alchemist Lounge. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find Alex on LinkedIn and Twitter at Alex Atwood. And on Instagram at Alex_Atwood_coaching. See you next time on The Alchemist Lounge.